There's a great and a bloody fight round this whole world tonight. In the battle, the bombs and shrapnel rain. Hitler told the world around he would tear our Union down. But our Union's gonna break them slavery chains. And our Union's gonna break them slavery chains.
Hello, and welcome back to our podcast. What a fanfic of a fanfic. For itself is a synthesis of Fallout, the popular game about a post-apocalyptic wasteland, and My Little Pony, a popular show about pastel horses. Hi, I'm Fi. I'm joined once again with my co-host, Weird. Say hello, Weird.
Here we are on the final stretch, and yet, you cannot, for the life of you, you filthy anarchist boy, refer to me by my proper given title. Title given? By the divinely ordained queen, myself, Sir Weirdington Esquire, at your service, dear audience, though not at the service of this brigand. What do you have for us, brigand? We are at the beginning of a new book and the final book, and so disappears my obligation to recap anything except that our hero has been hit by a boat.
You're off this week, basically.
And driven into the next dungeon, even though, like, it's wildly unnecessary to force that, given that, like, they have literally every reason to go there of their own volition.
Yes, all right, so we want to get started right away? We want to dive right into this 2 minutes in? All right, motherfuckers, you want to start with a big whammy right away? So here's how this chapter starts.
Here's how this chapter starts.
Girded. 3 months later.
Holy shit. What?
This is a longer stretch of time than the entirety of the text has up to this point.
What? Okay.
I told you this one goes off the rails, like, harder than you ever thought it could. Everything you thought you knew was real is wrong.
Just when you think it has no more surprises left for you. Like, I said I wasn't girded, but I was wrong because my girding just fell off. My gut protector, the massive archaic belt that preserved my guts, my girdle is just slipped right off.
And that was a bitch to get around a jukebox. Yeah, this one starts off in maybe one of the most batshit insane ways. So, there is no evidence of this, but I swear this existed, that when this chapter first came out...
This is why you asked me to predict what I thought was going to happen next. This was not anywhere near what I was expecting. Like, okay.
So, there was a disclaimer.
Way to go, Summer. You subverted my expectations.
For once. So there originally was, like, something of a, like, disclaimer or whatever you want to call it. I swear this exists. It might only just be in the author's notes, but this entire chapter is told in a really bizarre way, and they kind of apologized that, like, there's no way that I can make this chapter make any sense without kind of cheating. So look forward to that. This is exciting. But yeah, they're finally in the last book. We're finally at the end. We are in the deep, deep, deep weeds. So this chapter, 3 months later, starts off being told from a perspective of a different character. We are in the head and body and shoes of, I guess, pony shoes, whatever, of a bunch of the Steel Rangers at Stable 99, who have been, like, you know, they got like, part of the deal was they got that place as their new base or whatever. It's complicated. And a bunch of the refugees of the Enclave have flown down, and now a bunch of the stable dwellers are living in the new stable along beside them. And there's kind of a weird, like, like, there's already a dumb moment.
That's how they're going to feed everybody. Everybody that dies of starvation goes into the cannibal machine.
They're, oh God, these chapters are insufferable. Like, this scene, this whole chapter is really, really mind-bendingly awful. So to catch up a little bit from the original story, I'm not gonna spoil too much of the original story, since we will be touching them. Like, Weird will be reading that for the first time after we're done with all this stuff, so look forward to that in a couple of months. The end of the story culminates with, like, the Enclave being defeated and the sky being opening up, so now, like, the whole world isn't covered in an oppressive cloud cover, and it's now, like, the sun has been brought back. And part of that detail, which, because this will come up later, is Pip has been sort of, like, Pip is, like, Pip's stories have been cataloged into a book, and she's sort of, like, venerated as a pseudo savior known as the Lightbringer. That's not really important for this story, except for a very small amount, but the sun is back. That's the important part. But in this scene where it's still raining, a bunch of the Steel Rangers are talking about their plans for the future, and they talk with the, like, they see somebody off in the distance, and apparently they keep mentioning this is someone who's been wandering around the area, so they decide to, like, and there's kind of, like, a hope spot that this might be Blackjack, because everyone thinks Blackjack is dead now. Obviously she isn't. Like, I kind of don't understand why this chapter even sets up the idea that everybody thinks she's dead, because, like, Blackjack has lived through two, like, she lived through dying, soul exploding, and a nuke going off in her face. Like, at this point, like, the audience is pretty wise to the idea that Blackjack is invincible, so, like, I kind of don't understand why, like, there's this framing device at all. But regardless, they finally decide to, like, meet this this mysterious figure, and it's an Alicorn! Yay! And they talk with her, and after a little bit of conversation, we realize it's Lacuna! Yay! She's back somehow, even though she died. Hold your vomit. No, hold your vomit. It turns out, no, actually, she goes, oh, I'm actually Song. I just have all of Lacuna's memories. So it's like I never died.
Why does it hurt? Why would I care? Why do I care enough for it to hurt? It's so bad. It's so bad.
It's because despite the story itself, like, I think you're the same place I'm in, where you're just mad at, like, story construction itself be falling apart here. Where, like, the only thing that, like, Lacuna and Psalm have ever done in this story is make a last sacrificial moment to save their friend. And that is undone in a heartbeat. You're right there.
Oh, this is because my girdle was detached by the free lunch hunt. I was open. And he dropped my dart so I could stab me right in the pelvis.
Yep.
It hurts so bad.
Sorry.
This is the one thing he clearly cared about. The only thing he cared just to do was die.
Yeah.
Right then and there. What? How could you? How could he?
But yeah, so he undiefies her, and, like, I just don't want to talk about any one of these points in particular too much depth, but it's kind of, like, just bullshit to bring your characters back after killing them like this. Like, I don't really like character death in general at all in the first place, because you run in these kind of situations where once you kill a character that you'd love to have in a scene, you're kind of stuck with them being dead and, like, unable to participate.
The white.
No, she doesn't. She's Psalm now, though.
Yeah, she's purified of her, like, the impurities wiped away. She is once again Psalm.
Yes, she is.
The character that Summer really cares about? Yeah.
I guess.
The fucking, like, theocratic serial killer, Psalm. Aren't we happy to have her back? What happens next?
they talk about the idea that, of course, Blackjack can't possibly have died, and Psalm makes some weird line about, like, the world still needs her and she won't die until then, and, like, I don't give a shit about this as a plot point. But at least she gets to go and romance Stronghoof, I guess, so I guess that's something that's gonna happen. Stronghoof and Psalm are gonna have kids, and they're all gonna be enormous. He'll be able to pass down the Stronghoof family line traditions for generations to come. That's cool. We get a lot of, like, so I'm just gonna put these all together in one scene, but there's a bunch of interstitial cuts where it jumps from we seeing a bunch of things happening around in the wasteland, and then it jumping back to like, I'm assuming Blackjack's like narration of the core. And admittedly, the core is spooky because, like, since it's just like, it's a giant enervation death trap, and enervation like kills everything, so even like bacteria can't like exist within a high enervation area. The entirety of the city is in this like weird kept under glass kind of feel where like all of the corpses that are still like all the corpses are still there and they haven't decayed into skeletons yet. They're just like, they're there frozen in time and all that shit's kind of spooky. I will admit, combined with it, like, there's just the general aesthetic of the core being these like giant monolithic towers, mostly because it was like the heart of the city, basically Manhattan. That the entirety of the city just looks like it's like closing around on Blackjack at all times is a cool aesthetic. Whatever. It's a bunch of interstitial scenes and I'm just cutting them together into one spot because it doesn't really like serve to keep cutting back and say, yeah, this is also happening while Blackjack's doing stuff. My notes are really, really short here because a lot of this stuff is like made me flip my lid. So zoom cut to the next set of characters to see how everybody else is doing. Bam, we go to the society, and like the society is thriving and doing super well, which is a great thing to hear, I guess, because apparently in the 3 months since Grace has been in power, she managed to like convince the nobles that like paying the serfs is good, and so like slavery is abolished. Huzzah! Yay!
The Confederacy would have abolished slavery on their own.
Except, here's an important part about it, though. One of the other conditions of serfs were they weren't allowed to leave. It never mentions whether or not that happens. So they're paid, but they can't escape, I guess? Which is just... It's just prison labor, probably, like, is like what it's changed to. Oh, cool, you're paid 80 cents every day for working a full day's labor. Congratulations, you're now no longer a slave. You're a prisoner. You're now a convict. But it talks about how awesome it is, and they're like, they've like tripled their profits now, and all the nobles like are shutting up about like the slave paying the slaves now because like they're making so much more money now. They're just, you know, which is sure, whatever, I guess. Congratulations, capitalists, you managed to like in the wake of the sun coming back and having like
They've massed like their profits are massively increased, because they've innovated on exploitation. They've now moved from serfdom to capitalism.
Yes,
you spend way less money on your laborers' upkeep if you absolve yourself of that upkeep. And pay them way less than you spent on their needs by just paying them for the a subpar amount for their labor. So they have to beg, borrow, and steal their basic needs. But it costs you less to maintain them.
So this has gone from slavery to a coal town. Cool.
It's gone from slavery to a company store.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, it's a coal town. It's coal towns are built on site and you lived in them and all you could pay was, all you were paid was in scrip. Yeah, just more of the 16 tons, what do you get? Base boosted over all of this. Yeah. Very, very good. Very good capitalism. Fantastic.
Congratulations, guys. You're set free. We're abolishing serfdom. They're now all sharecroppers.
Yep. This, and like this was a baffling scene because there like a couple of weeks back, I saw an argument played out on the Reddit by one of the editors of this piece of shit, talking about how like the slavery of the society was unfortunate, but nothing they could actually solve because they had to get it, like they couldn't do anything about it. What was the term they used? They had like a reformist put into power. Eventually, they'd get their slavery abolished anyways. So,
in the meantime, they're holding a wolf by the ears, eh?
Yeah. So I much prefer the headcanon we had with 21 and now that they had 3 months of downtime, apparently, 21 and Rampage blasted that blasted the society into a smoking crater. That's my going thing. And
21 built a guillotine. well, Rampage did some extrajudicial killings.
Yes. And all the serfs, because all the serfs already had all the agricultural knowledge, they just like self-owned the farms and are now like doing super well now the sun's back, and like they're the ones with the mass agricultural knowledge, and like all the nobles are dead. That's my headcanon. That's what I'm going with.
Yes. This
Christ. Christ. fuck Sombra. Like, seriously,
The golf courses became a commons, and the invaluable cultivating knowledge of the former serfs became an incredibly valuable bargaining tool with the other factions of the Waste, and they were able to like expand and act as important advisors for building new cropland elsewhere under the stringent demands that like you don't get shit if you try to put chains back on us or anybody else.
No tyrants here. Death to fascists, all that shit. That dark shitty bullshit aside, now we go to the Reapers, who are operational still somehow.
Sure.
This became one of the most unbelievable parts about it, where I thought the Steel Rangers got, like, I thought the Steel Rangers, like, systematically crushed them effectively, and there was, like, no one left. Nope, apparently they're doing fine. They bounced right back from that. And also, all the gangs are still around, even though they would have been mostly wiped out by the Rangers during that war. They're all fine, and they're all thriving. In fact, like, they've got, like, a huge boost to their numbers because of all those refugees that fell out of the sky. Because, you know, those people wouldn't be destitute and hungry, and, like, definitely wouldn't be good, like, gang stock. But whatever.
Actually, that seems like ideal fodder for...
Well, I'm just saying, like, these people are, like, people who have lived in, like, the lap of, like, complacency and luxury for so long. Like, what are they going to know?
The working class, not the underclass who are...
Oh, the underclass don't exist anyways.
Oh, yeah. Well, not in Sombra's world. Unless they're mentioned, but they don't matter.
They probably all died. But, yeah, it's I don't know. It's a dumb plot point. It's the Reapers also, again, don't make any sense with their whole, like, oh yeah, we're the 100 best of the best, and all the gangs have to, like, pay tithing to us, and then, like, 70,000 refugees just fell out of the sky on top of the hoof. Like, where are we putting all of them?
I'm kind of reminded of the Spartans, as far as I can tell, like, listening to history nerds talk about the history of the various wars between the Hells, the Spartans... As far as I can tell, we're actually like all that good at war. They had a long history of losing wars or chickening out and finding excuses not to participate in wars. But what they were really awesome at was PR. their historical skill was getting into the history books as perfect super soldiers, in spite of no evidence on the ground of this quality. If the Reapers are good at anything, if Horace Bronson is good at anything, it's marketing the Reapers as a threat. All these pie-eyed sky suburbanites drop out of the sky and with nowhere to go and panicked and not looked after by anybody, they see Horace Bronson come to them and say, like, we are the 100 most terrifying warlords of the surface world. If you want to survive, you should immediately begin paying fealty to us. And as a bunch of pie-eyed sky suburbanites who are part of a fascist hyper authoritarian rule, that sound pretty good to them. In that light, it makes perfect sense to me. Like,
I think it's just more the improbability of how the Reapers are still around.
I can imagine that, like, there would be, like, before this godsend, before the boon of a bunch of rubes literally falling from the sky, there's, like, a core of, like, maybe 30 of them left or something, like, real true believer loyalists.
Yeah, I suppose. I guess I could see that. It's just really silly. It's also just really silly that we're getting this weird scene where like one of them is getting like, you know, getting their beat into the gang, whatever you want to call it. They're getting their initiation. It's a character we've seen a long time before in Candlewick. He was part of the like, you remember that B team of weirdos that followed Blackjack?
We're much better. Candlewick. He was a pyrophobe who nonetheless is put in the position of having his only asset being his skills with burning things.
Yeah. Yeah. The respectable crew, the people we liked. But yeah, it's just them. It's kind of just them, their initiation and sort of like, I don't know. It there's a weird thing we get to meet the like the best worst character, a character named Toaster, who's the leader of the burners or whatever they're called in this setting. He's the worst because he's the most like lame ass excuse for like a like womanizing creep. But I kind of appreciate him because he's so cartoonishly stupid that he feels like he fits within like. The Reaper's dumb hierarchy, because his whole thing is he just like he wears an armor made of toasters that are set off to like set off and explode on him, and I feel like that's such a dumb and perfect and stupid and apocalyptic like fighting style that I feel like it actually like reminds me of the earlier parts of the story. So like I like Toaster's concept, I hate his like character, I guess. But I hate, like, everybody's character, so it's not really surprising.
It's also a bummer that we have to, like, headcanon a way to, like, it makes sense, I guess, in premise, but if I've got to, like, come up with excuses for it, then the text almost certainly doesn't allow for any of these assumptions, or doesn't provide, like, where you would otherwise have to assume.
Yeah, you're not wrong about that. Oh, man, this is going to be doing a short chapter, because this is just most of this kind of stuff happening. And there's not much to talk about. Like, there's not enough, like, there's no connective tissue to anything, because it is just, like, it's literally vignettes. Just, yeah, it's just vignettes. It's short stories. It's, you know, it's 100 Tales of the West. It's 1,001 stories.
If it doesn't flash back to 3 months ago to handle what the fuck happened with, BJ in the like final dungeon. Like I don't know how I'm going to emotionally handle it.
It's gonna be egg on your
BJ
face.
Handle the final dungeon off screen.
That would be incredible. That would be a very Project Horizons move. Just be like, nah, the dungeon part bores me, so here we're just the final bad guy.
No, like the final boss was defeated 2 months ago.
There's a section here that's like almost completely skippable, but it takes up a huge chunk of this. But I don't really know what to say about it, because we go to chapel and we see how like 21 and Scotch are doing, and kind of just what has happened to the rest of the crew that still survives. And apparently the plan is that they are trying to take Blackjack's kind of like final words to heart, or like the final thing she ever told them to do if she ever did die, which was like, try to live your life and like forget all of the shit that happened to me. And so 21, like, I hate 21 and I hate everything about his character and I hate the way he's presented and I hate how he's the moral voice of the story, but I like this scene because I like that like Chapel is starting to like in the wake of the sort of like post apocalypse, like we're living in a weird, like, things are getting better because the sun is back and most of the major factions, at least
Reconstruction Age.
Yeah, exactly. That chapel's doing really well, and, like, while there's still a lot of orphans, like, a lot of, like, refugees and people that, like, Blackjack has helped have sort of moved into the town to make it bigger, and because Scotch has a huge obsession with, like, architecture and infrastructure, like, the chapel is, like, a place that is actually thriving in the sort of post-Thunderhead, I guess, age, even though Thunderhead had nothing to do with this. And, like, 21's become a teacher, which is, like, a thing that, like, he kind of, like, talked about wanting to do a really long time ago as sort of a thing he like wanted, you know, one of those like, oh, if all of this is over, what are you gonna do now moments. And he's like, oh, I'm gonna be a teacher. And there is kind of a cute moment where he has a bunch of like kids in a class and he's like instructing them how to like disassemble and take apart mines to deactivate them, because there's a lot of just mines around because, you know, it's a war area. And it's kind of cute. There is one goofy snag in this scene where he mentions that one of the people there is a, like, Raider's daughter, and, like, again, Somber forgets that, like, Raiderism is a disease that happened in his story, and not, like, a thing you can be. Like, again, Raider is not an occupation in the story. It's mad cow disease. So
it's been turned back into an occupation. He's forgotten the entire...
he forgot his entire, like, four books of his story again.
Yeah.
But it's still a cute... it's still overallly a cute scene. It's nice seeing the kind of thing that, like, it... You know, that sort of better future where, like, what would happen to 21 if, like, he didn't have to deal with Blackjack and all the shit that happened in 99. And I like that. And I like Scotch Tape getting to do stuff. Like, Scotch Tape is utterly a redundant character in the crew. She has nothing to do because Glory is, you know, has her entire skill set and more. Scotch doing her own little thing in Chapel and thriving in there is genuinely cute. I think it's a really good, like, this is a good, like, this feels like the climax to a story that isn't the ending. Like, this feels like the, no, this might
yeah,
actually
it feels like
be
an epilogue. Yeah. It feels like, wrapping up, putting the chairs on the tables,
turning off all the lights and stuff. Yeah, it's a cute scene though, and you know, we get a kind of like I think contextually narrative moment of 21 like talking with his daughter, and they're talking about moving on and all this stuff, and like as she leaves, him staring into the core and like, you know, saying like, "Come on, Blackjack, I know you're still in there," and like I think that's a cute moment. I think that's a good like. For as garbage these characters are and the bullshit relationship that they've had, like I like and trying to set them up as like lovers, the idea that like between all they've been through and all they've seen, like this is a more compelling moment than all of the times like a character has talked about how cool Blackjack is and how like amazing and stupendous and list off all the bullshit she's done, and just having a little quiet moment where like a character yeah. like firmly believes she's alive just because of all the things she's done, I think is way better writing than we normally get here.
One thing that I kind of want to point out before we move on is that it is hilarious on multiple levels that her advice was like, if she disappears, just forget about it and move on with your life and like try and rebuild. Because on one hand, it's ironically incredibly egomaniacal because like, okay, if I can't be around to solve all of the time bombs that are going to end, like be the second impact to bring the apocalypse into the double apocalypse, then give up, like just enjoy your remaining days, because if I'm not there, then like it's impossible for you to solve it.
But she's also right about that. Like she is the only one that can solve them.
Yes, but on the other hand, the fact that they've been able to like Blackjack's disappearance has coincided with the wasteland becoming imminently more habitable, with everything has demonstrably improved in her absence, and which goes to sort of imply that the world was only ending because she was there.
Blackjack is a walking apocalypse. Like in this more self-aware story, I definitely think that like. You could have really played, like, leaned into that like, you're making things work worse. Which, because there's hints of that every once in a while, where, like, as she becomes, like, a cyborg and loses more of herself and becomes more obsessed with, like, this ridiculous quest, that it's slowly killing all the people around her. And you can kind of just, you know, extrapolate that out into the wasteland, that everything is getting worse because Blackjack is so obsessed with completing this, like, insane, arduous test that has no merit. And she's dragging the whole universe around with her.
Yeah. I mean, it would take a much, much better writer because currently this recurring theme is Somber has everything get worse when as punishment for BJ trying to be anything other than a gun. Like as punishment for BJ choosing the wrong side of the gun or Superman Iron Giant dilemma in a proper like. Keeping with the My Little Pony themes, it should be that everything gets worse when she chooses gun over Superman.
Yes.
But oh well.
Greener pastures and better stories. Take notes, people.
Oh God! And the implicit neo like it comes back to the implicit neo Confederate apology that the society is that. It's very much. I'm not sure how much he intends it. Somber is sort of demonstrating that. Things get better on their own without anybody working for it. You shouldn't be an activist for positive change. Change already happens. You should just collect guns or die, and mm-hmm. or die. You should die as a gun, both. And that will and blood makes the grass grow green. Fuck.
Yeah, that's dire. Shit. Oh boy. But yeah, I do like this scene. I think it's good. I think it works on its own. I think it's more demonstrative of 21's character than we've seen so far a lot yep. of the time. And same with Scotch. Scotch is good. We also learned that, like, Rampage is just gone. Like, she's just missing. Like, she's like, I'm gonna be a sky pirate for a while, then realized that, like, there was no, like, sky to plunder anymore because the Enclave lost. So she's just like, ah, fuck it, and just kind of, like, left. And she's been missing ever since. Come on. So then we flash over to what remains of the Enclave soldiers, and we get to see their side of the story. So we go back to Storm Chaser, I think is her actual name. I've been calling her Stormfront. Then I found out that there's actually a character named Stormfront, so fuck me.
Amazing.
Hair Stormer over here. She's talking with another coworker, and they're yelling about, like, they're basically yelling about being on the wrong side of history, which is really, like, jarring to actually see. Like, this is more, like, we get a lot of Nazi apologia in this story, but this is very much out of the, like, fashy playbook. Both of them are discussing about, like, sort of the nature of, like, oh, whoops, we're Nazi generals, and Nazi Germany doesn't exist anymore. Like, what do we do? And a lot of them are like, well, we should just, like, take civilian lives and try to help out around the wastes, you know, the wastes we almost fucked over permanently, and try to, like, sort of reconvene and try to heal these wounds. And the other guy's basically like, man, you know what sucks? It sucks about how the fact that Little Pip wrote in her book about how bad we are and how there's no nuance in the narrative about how bad we are.
Jesus Christ.
Like, it literally uses the term nuance, like, it specifically. And how, like, I knew a bunch of good soldiers who just wanted to lay down their lives and do what was right. It's like, you're the Nazis. What part of that did you forget?
The thing they were laying down their lives for was poisoning the, like, was eradicating yeah. all life on the surface. you still hold them to that being the that defining rightness? Is that what you're doing, buddy? Is that what...
It's sort of incredible how this is like a double whammy of Nazi apologia and also shitting on the main story, because in the main story it doesn't treat the Enclave particularly favorably because, you know, they're the bad guys, and like this story does that thing that it's done before where it, like, it invents new facts.
Oh, and then it's going the extra mile by saying the canon material, the core canon, was written from the perspective of an unreliable narrator.
Yes. Which is,
oh boy,
partly true, but not in the way that Somber's presenting it. It's just like, well, the Enclave in the original story is just from Little Pip's perspective, and she had a really biased perspective. Yeah, because they were trying to kill her. And also all life, like, literally the only things we ever see in the original story of the Enclave is, there's also a very specific line, too, where they're also mad that, like, it was like, well, they disassembled the Enclave, and now we can't hold, like, all of the actual, like, Navarro generals that try to do Operation Cauterize to any sort of, like, legal action, and we can't, like, do any sort of judiciary work on them. And they just, and specifically pisses on the idea that, close to the climax, Little Pip, like, summary executes a, high general of the Enclave, in one of the raddest moments of the entire story. And, like, Somber takes a second to piss on that and say that, like, well, that's not legal. It's like, you're not a legal body. Like, that's a really, like, sinister thing about this, is that, like, the Enclave aren't a legal body. They're, like, there's a really good video, I think it was by Dan Olson, talking about, like, Superman in the military and why, like, in the original Man of Steel movie, he, like, gets arrested by the military as, like, a show of power. It's because, like, he's prostrating himself in front of what the audience would consider a government body of the military, like someone who can arrest someone like Superman is someone like that. By that, validating the United States' like claim to stand as a representative of law itself, essentially. And it's sort of in this case too. It's like the Enclave are not they're not a government. Like they pretend to be because they are fascists, but they're not. Like this legitimizes them in a way that like nothing else does, by saying that like their laws are just, even though like the only times we've ever seen them take any sort of like actions in the story is we know that Dashites exist, which are specifically political opponents that have been branded as traitors and sent to the service to die. And the only other thing we ever see them do is Operation Cauterize, which was an effort to exterminate service life, primarily because they were out of resources and needed to maintain their forever war, but spun as a PR thing that they needed to reunite the surface and the sky. It's complicated, but it's just a fash war, whatever.
These criminals that we followed completely, who issued illegal orders that we did not defy, need to be brought to justice by a trial, by a jury of their peers, us.
The people that listen to them. Yeah, it's a kind of it's a sort of incredible like sort of head spin. Like it's a very specific trick that like that Sombra is doing here by presenting the idea that like the Enclave are ultimately like a governing body, which they are not, and therefore they should be able to take their actions in their own hands. Like the idea is like it's very maddening to basically have a character like an author say that like, well, the generals committed crimes and those are illegal, and like, yeah, and they got away with it because that's how wars work.
Also, the time they made the laws, so they weren't, they were not illegal. This is actually like a really weird thing that happened at the end of World War II. Like the Nuremberg trials, like had this like incredibly awkward precedent problem of like, okay, we're now convening a new legal body that we have invented to prosecute these people who did things that like are crimes in the moral sense, but not the legal sense, because they were the governors of the state in which they did it. Yeah. And so we are now put in a position of creating laws to try them by, which is, under normal circumstances, really bad, really kangaroo,
yes.
Under all other circumstances, creating a law to try somebody under, well, they're going to be found guilty because, like, it is not a question as to whether or not they did it. And, like, we created the law after they did it. But, like, the world was bigger than it was before when the World War started. The world is much smaller now, and we now find ourselves in a position of needing this thing we're calling international law.
Yeah.
So it was a mess. Like that there was a lot of finicky details that was talked about. And oh god, like saying that, like it now really hits home that
Sombra is really mad at the Nuremberg trials.
Which, I mean, like, that's pretty common for, like, historical chuds, though. Like, in my own server, someone blamed Muslims for the Barbary Wars, and that's why we should hate them in the modern times. So it's not shocking to me. That guy's gone now, so, like, don't worry about it. It's a funny memory to remember. But, yeah, this is just what historical chuds do. But, yeah, we also have, like, Rainbow Dash being here and being absolutely fucking useless to the story. But she, like, remembered to drink her, like, anti-fascism juice again and remembered her main character, like, her one defining trait in the original story, even though it's really hollow in the story and makes no fucking sense. Because they talk to Rainbow Dash in the scene, and saying that they're like, okay, like, well, what are you going to do now? And she's like, well, probably just going to do what I always do, and just kind of, like, help people out in the waste, because that's all I really wanted, is I wanted the Enclave to help the surface. And it was like,
by eradicating everyone on it.
Well, because that's how she is in the original story. Like she firmly believed that surface sky segregation was the worst possible choice. She literally like conspired a machine to exist that would to break down that segregation. And in this story, though, she's a terrorist and a fucking like fascist and a like just monster. And her saying this comes across as comically hollow.
What are you going to do now, Rainbow Dash? Well, the same thing I was up to before, pulls gun. No, I mean helping people. Cocks gun. No, I mean it literally this time.
Christ. We only got a couple more scenes to go through. We see what the zebra's up to, and no one gives a fuck. Not even a little bit. The only reason why the scene is good at all is because Sakashi's here. But it's mostly about Lancer, like, trying to be a better person and basically trying to wake his own people up to, like, the Legate's, like, corruption and evil and cruelty and his religious, like, manipulation. But it just does not fucking matter to this story at all. Zebras have never mattered in this story, and I refuse to, like, care about this scene.
Sure is lucky the Legate is, like, I guess really content and feckless. Otherwise, like, with the only person with, like, with blackjack on, like, should be, like, fucking, like, wasn't he on a conquest bender, like, 3 months ago? Wasn't he, like, seizing territory?
I guess not anymore.
And Accelerator, he got bored?
Yeah, who knows. The Legate is very, like, inconsequential, this story right now, until he's remembered about. There's a scene that I actually, like, forgot in my notes, but, like, I forgot that it's important, but for fucking insane complicated reasons. The only reason why this scene is, I care about this scene at all, is because Morningstar is here and she's great. The one bit of credit I can properly give to Somber is that, like, Somber doesn't do that thing that a lot of people who do, like, trans or dubiously trans characters are, which is, like, still referring to them by male pronouns because, ha ha ha, they were a guy at one point, and she just uses female pronouns throughout. So, like, that's the one thing I'll give Somber here is, like, at least, like, you didn't do that. You passed the bare minimum bar. This could have been much worse. But, like, the newly christened Lady Morningstar hot babes her way around while they, like, try to figure out, like, her Dawn and her younger sister Moonshadow are trying to, like, figure out, like, science, basically. Like, so we learn an insane fact. So we learn that they can't heal their father Sky Striker because he has... he apparently has enervation rings in him now because of when he was gored by Dawn. But apparently they're enervation rings that are like the size of cells or smaller. So like enervation rings are just nanomachines now. Apparently they're just nanites.
Whatever.
So he's been affected by ghost magic curse nanites that make it so he can't hear them. But, like, this plot point also makes no fucking sense because Triage still, like, figures out how to fix this problem using magic. Because apparently they unlock some ancient spell they didn't know about because, this fucking scene's so dumb and complicated. Yeah, it's very much, like, white noise what I'm saying right now. But, like, it's important, trust me. But they basically find out that, like...
Yeah, no, I have to apologize for the audience for the, like... three minutes of television static.
That's thick that I've been saying this whole time. It super doesn't matter except for the fact that this metaphysics mumbo jumbo is incredibly complicated and important to the final like arc of the story. But the basic boil down to it is that like, so it turns out that like enervation metal or like star metal is probably basically like nanites that are holding a specific form based off of like magic radiation keeping them in that shape, and that you can change that shape by exposing it to different vibrations of magic. This is how they get it out of Sky Striker or whatever his name is, because they kind of just like pull the nanomachines out of them, and then they have like enough of it to like test it, and it like changes shapes and stuff like that. So like apparently it's like can do that. And they're just like, huh, that has interesting implications on the future. That's neat. And then they like talk about the core some more. And it's like, trust me, it's important to learn that Star Metal is essentially like a hyper complex nano structure, essentially like a nanite structure that's holding a form, because it'll be critically important to how we solve this entire fucking story. But anyways, we're almost done. We finally get to my least favorite scene, maybe in this whole entire fucking story. Me and a friend had long conversations about this last night, about the scene, because they're currently reading over the story along with us, Sidus, even though I, you know, specifically warned them not to. But we've been having some fun conversations about it. So,
deviant.
Degenerate.
Freak.
So we spy Dawn and Steel Rain talking, and this scene is terrible. So the context of what they're actually doing is they're trying to set up some sort of like remote relay. It doesn't matter. What does matter is apparently Steel Rain has been Ben Shapiro this entire time, because he just like blows up Dawn with facts and logic. Because Dawn is like has been acting shifty apparently, and Steel Rain's like, you know, whatever, like, I think you're countermanding your orders from your goddess, and this doesn't make any sense. And she's just like, well, don't, you know, I'm the prophet of the goddess, you have to listen to me. So, like, instead of doing the thing that Dawn has done up to this point and turning him into mincemeat, he smacks her, like so many, like, he hits her and basically just shuts her down at every single point when she brings up, like, points about this shit. He disassembles all of her conversation thoroughly. Like, this scene is, it's hard to get into the exact like details of it, but this scene is grotesque. Like, I was just deeply upset about this scene, because this scene like reads so much like domestic abuse that it's kind of fucked up and weird that it's happening at all. Because Dawn has been like hit by Steel Rain, and she's basically like cowering at him, like effortlessly breaking down all of her conversation, like all of her conversation points that she knows the goddess needs her, and you'll suffer to this. And he's just like, nah, I don't think so. That's not actually going to happen to me. Apparently, I'm just absolved of all consequences of my actions now, even though I have a heart bomb in me. So like, what does this matter? And this scene is just really gross. Like it's I'm kind of skimming over it, but it's like it's really really grotesque. And eventually, Dawn like breaks down and admits that like she's been like countermanding the goddess's true orders, because the goddess wants Blackjack alive because she needs her for something important. And Dawn wants that for herself. She knows, she's like, no, I want to be special. Which is like just a hot turd on a Sunday in this whole scene. Like I was having this conversation, how like, what the fuck is this scene, and why is Dawn like this now? Like, Dawn's entire character up to this point.
Sumber is really mad that one ghostwriter like, yes, made a really strong female antagonist. Like, he's real mad.
Yes, Garen fucking
and getting
Teed.
Madder every day.
Garen fucking Teed.
Introduction, Dawn. would have like no sold the smack, and then placed her hoof on his forehead and marked him like as a prophet of an evil god would. A defiant supplicant.
And then filled him with razor sharp wing pinions that would have filled him with nanites, killing him instantly. And not like, yeah, because it's important to remember that she's a fucking Necron queen. Like, because this really should have just been like, oh, I'm sick of you, clang, you know, and not like smack her down and she's like a disheveled like housewife all of a sudden.
Yeah, he raises a hand against the god's prophet, and she gently places a hoof on his forehead and melts him like a candle, and now he can't words good, and is barely alive, and is now just a zombie servitor in a fancy tin can.
Yes, I wish that was what happened, but no, this scene keeps playing out, and I just like also really want to like talk about the fact that like Dawn has gone from a character who like, she's the only character that I think works as a dark mirror to Blackjack, or at least her introduction, that she's a person who is old and jaded, but effectively believes the same thing, that we need to, like, save the waste from itself. Except she has become way more extreme, because she believes that literally, like, only, like, theocratic domination is the only way to save the wasteland from itself, because she has lost faith in people being able to do it themselves, because she has been shown time and time again, every time she tries to rally people around her cause, they are always failures, and it always goes really bad for her. It happened with the Companions, it happened with Thunderhead, and, you know, seemingly it's happened again.
Oh, Jesus Christ, like, pointing that out, I'm even madder now, because, like, so in the real world, historically, so, like, for example, Muhammad is not the founder of Islam. The angel that came to Muhammad is. What's-his-face is not the founder of Mormonism. It was the angel Moroni. There's a recurring trend in powerful cult leaders who history remembers as founding cults, insisting it is not I, but the God. The I am merely a messenger for a higher being. And so the original author of Dawn, I kind of suspect might have, like, been influenced a little bit by this, because, like, she is a dark mirror of a shonen / JRPG protagonist. She is an extremely charismatic person who gathers extremely talented people and is able to delegate to them to achieve massive things. And so a dark perversion of that, like the bizarro version of that, like the anti Blackjack, who, like, sort of typifies those tropes, or at least is supposed to, would be somebody who, like, loses faith and uses all of those skills to build a cult.
Yes, and try to destroy the world.
And so what would a cult leader do if, like, the person, one of their staff, one of their supplicants, who they have a bomb attached to their heart, dared raise a hand against them?
Yeah, she would vaporize him. But yeah, it's and we now learn that, I guess, Dawn's... Okay, so I'm going to start saying Somber's motivation for Dawn, because this is so wildly out of character.
It's a new character. It's a different...
Yeah,
it's
now Dusk. it's Fallen Dawn. yes. She's become a cartoon character, but she's... This new version of her didn't care about any of that. She just wanted to be special in the eyes of her god. And that's all that mattered. And she hated that Blackjack stole that away from her. Which is, like, such a, like it has to be, like, a ghostwriter. Like, it could have been by accident that Somber just wrote a great character and then smothered them with his own, like, bullshit. But, like, this the only way this makes sense, because, like, Somber hates women. Like, that's... I've had some debates about whether or not, like, his motivations are, like, very purely, like, misogynistic. But, like... I genuinely believe he hates women, or at least he, like, has issues with them. Because he keeps doing this, where, like, girl brains are hard, so how do women respond to things? Well, they only care about themselves and their own feelings. They don't care about higher callings. That would be silly. So she has, like, a, like, high school-esque temper tantrum because, like, she's not the favorite of the family anymore, and had a meltdown about that. And that is so wildly out of character, it's actually kind of comical. And the only way that the only possible way I can kind of see this is that people, like, complained, Cognitum wanting to save Blackjack and then suddenly sicking Dawn under to kill her feels out of character, and therefore this is trying to fix a plot hole, but it creates a much larger narrative, like, indiscrepancy with characterization, which I think is always a much more grievous sin. But anyways, to round out this scene, this despicable, awful scene that makes me genuinely uncomfortable, because it's very important to remember, Steel Rain is definitely, like, the man who wears the pants in this scene. Like, he is in total control, he is effortlessly taking down all of her arguments, and he also, like, condescends her by, like, patting her on the head and shit, which just, like, really, really gets to me. Like, that really gets under my skin, and not in the way that, like, I think Somber intends by, like, oh, you're supposed to hate this guy, so of course he's, like, gross about women, but, like, he's also right. Like, he's in the right here. So any of the actions he takes while it's happening feel really, like, unsavory and gross towards women as a whole. But anyways, she finally, like, has enough. And
disavow.
Like, yeah, disavow. But she gores him with her wings finally after giving up on it, and he's, like, bleeding out and dying. And, like, the goddess makes her appearance, Cognitum makes her appearance, but of course she's, like, cloaked in shadow because we can't see in the scene yet what she actually looks like. And, like, she's like, enough! Your betrayals have been laid bare. You're trying to destroy Blackjack. And, like, violently rips Dawn apart to kind of, like, prove a point. Like, she's not dead, but she's been, like, she's, like, torn apart to prove a point, I guess. And she's like, you will be rewarded for your uncovering this betrayal. You will be remade, anew and stronger. It's cool that he also got rewarded for, like...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, like, that's my favorite part, is he got, like,
rewarded. Very right, and we need a real final boss.
Still Rain fucking sucks. It's important to remember, too, that Still Rain is, like,
she has now been replaced as the, the...
Business as usual. But yeah. It just really sticks to me, too, that also, like, Still Rain is, like, this, comical pretty boy who, like, this keeps doing this, right? Like, if you remember, his introduction was, like, he's the second in command to a powerful woman, and when he's just tired of her shit, it turns out that, like, oh, actually, like, all of them are on his side naturally, so she gets immediately cooed. Like, that just keeps happening. Like, he just keeps being able to do this shit in a way that's really unsatisfying. Also, I don't want you to get too mad about this, but we also kind of find out that how Blackjack, like, survived is she, like, fell into a jewelry store, and because she runs on, like, gem batteries, that's how she survived being sent into the core. And we learned that how this has all been happening, like, how we've been seeing this, is Blackjack has been using the Perceptotron, which is the thing that, like, the guy used to spy on her to, like, observe all these other people. And that scene with Cognitum in it ends with, like, Cognitum, like, spiking the Perceptron to have it blow up in her face. The final scene of this whole thing is Blackjack is, like, you know, she's...
But the Perceptron can only track people with pip bucks.
All of those people had pip bucks. Every single one of them. Even characters that would make no sense for them to have pip bucks, in the case of Storm Chaser, she's like, oh, look, I got this nifty pip buck, like, 2 months ago. Every single one of these characters had a pip buck. I don't know how any of the Reapers did, but fuck it. Apparently they just hand out pip bucks like candy now, so that's nifty. And there's a huge plotting discrepancy. Because pip bucks are supposed to be rare, by the way, folks. Like, really rare.
This is the part where I make a joke about, like, tasting copper or smelling toast, to imply my brain was breaking down. But I can tell you that inexplicably, the only thing in my head right now is the dancing digital baby GIF from the early aughts internet. Like, that's the only thing in my brain right now. That's the only thing I'm.
That's,
like,
probably for the best.
I can't process.
We got one, like, GIF. I've got, like, a sentence left of this chapter. So Blackjack's, like, gearing up, and she's got, like, Boo still with her. Like, Boo's alive and still with her, and she's just, like, carrying her.
You can also eat diamonds.
I guess. Well, there's also, like, food everywhere, because it hasn't rotted. Like, even though that's not how food works, but whatever. Yeah, don't think about it too hard.
Fields.
Yeah, don't worry about it. They're both basically immune to innervation, I guess, so who cares? None of this matters. But let me finish. Let me get to the final sentence. So they're about to head out, and they're, like, worried about, like, the patrols of death robots that apparently circle around the core. And, like, surprise, surprise, someone shows up through the door, and it's Rampage! Yay! She's like, oh, Blackjack, I finally found you! So I guess, like, the core's, like, defense net of lasers is just off now, I guess, because one of the... Well, no, that's actually not that inconsistent. Rampage has been in the core before, but she's... Every single time they've always brought it up, she's always just been like, you don't want to talk about it, man. Like, I don't want to relive whatever horrors were in there. So, even though enervation affects her just as much as it does everybody else, so I don't know how she, like, is here right now. Like, okay, so, like, enervation affects Rampage in a very special, specific way, which is that, like, it, like, fucks up her, like, gestalt, like, of brains, her hive brain, so that they, like, start rapidly oscillating between the different brains all the time. So, like, how are they having this conversation is completely news to me. But yeah, so that's our chapter. That's chapter one of book five, the final chapters of Project Horizons. So
once again, I'm pretty sure that it's just... Sombra being stupid and forgetting his own rules, but I think you could If you were going to headcanon an explanation, you're going to do a writer's room. I guess it's that, like, over the past 3 months, Rampage is built on the, like, work they started to do with psychosurgery before going into the Gonclave. And so now that, like, her gestalt is able to communicate within itself, she has a much more stable relationship and a finer puree of personalities. Mm-hmm. They're sticking together more, and so she's finally and as a result she's finally overcome the only thing that was weighing her down in the face of innervation.
So I think a fun alternative of it is that she just found a workaround, but that she's like managed to convene with all of her brain mates that she's just. She is still rapidly oscillating between them, but it doesn't matter because they're all effectively on the same page. And you could kind of had a fun thing where, like, she's, like, talking and she's kind of, like, in between like, her diction and vocabulary, like, keeps changing, like, every sentence or so. Like, that would have been hard to write. But
they're all networked, so.
Yeah. So they're all on the same page, they just talk different. And that would be fun.
Yeah. But would require effort and also remembering your own fucking rules.
Yes. Which just before we go into wrap up, I just the thing that we always talk about with Calvin Ball is that, like, Calvin Ball only works if you stick to your rules, and ignoring them or forgetting about them is always, like, how these stories get wonky and how, like, because, like, the thing is, you could technically call us out for just complaining about, like, well, it's a nitpick, whatever. The Rampage needs to be in the scene. Who cares? But, like, part of the only way that, like, you can make these stories work is by, like. Like, the only way that there's stakes in a Calvin Ball story is if you stick to the rules. If you say that, like, if you say guns kill people, and then you later introduce a scene where guns are actually not lethal, then, like, it's not as compelling when people have gunfights in your story.
Yeah, like, I think who cares is the operative question. Like, that is actually the most important question. Who cares? I don't. That is the problem.
Yes.
like if you can't stick to consistent, it's fine like flying by the seat of your pants and coming up with the rules as you go, but if you don't stick to them, it's impossible to give a shit. Because like literally nothing can matter, and anything can solve any given problem at any moment. So like you're just making a bunch of noise rather than telling me a story.
Yeah, exactly.
So who cares? I don't, and maybe
you shouldn't either.
Want me to. maybe I should want to.
That's generally why people read stories. But yeah, but that's any other like closing thoughts. What did you think about this chapter, anyways? I've been meaning to ask you about like what do you feel about?
Are all her legs broken? Like what the fuck has she been doing? Like squatting in this jewelry store for 3 months?
Well, her limbs self regenerate, and she's just been like avoiding robot. Like drone squads, I guess. There is a point that I forgot to like go into detail because you just kind of brought it up. Is that like apparently robots are shit at detecting things, and that's how she's been avoiding people. Like how she's been avoiding stuff is because like she's been able to stay under the radar of robots. And Steel Rain has noticed this, and he's kind of like sprung this on Dawn to like further invalidate her position. So she's just been like squatting in like various buildings within the Hoofington core and just sort of dodging like robot squads.
Also if Cognitum is like the guiding intelligence of all of this, like never mind. I don't know.
The more you think about it, the madder you're gonna get, for sure. Cognitum is frustrating. Cognitum's frustrating for the same reason they always are. Sombra hates women, and that bleeds into everything he makes.
Yeah. I think the number one takeaway from this chapter was the hilarious like reactionary lib take that like change doesn't require action or will, like it's everything's just going to get better on its own,
so don't bother, don't try to make active protest or anything like that. Just lay down and wait for society to
trust the system, even if the system is a genocide machine.
Yeah.
We should trust the genocide machine to pass judgment on its curators. Like, yeah, amazing nonsense.
I definitely, the thing that really stuck in my craw was the Nazis complaining about how they look bad in the history. Like the history books will go down and tell the history books will go down and tell people that they killed a bunch of people and almost exterminated all of society outside of themselves for resources, and that's a bad thing, I guess.
I don't.
Is there anything better we could be reading or consuming?
Nowhere Prophet.
Nowhere Prophet's pretty good.
And Cyberpunk are both pretty played out. But what if you did them at the same time, but also Hindu mythology?
Neat.
But also it takes place in India.
That's pretty sweet.
That's Nowhere Prophet. It's also has like very sort of it has something akin to like Magic the Gathering or Hearthstone gameplay, but with a sort of a battle map.
Interesting twist.
And the biggest twist is imagine one of those sort of generic Magic the Gathering style games, but it's a FTL style roguelike. So you can't really afford to, like, in every other game of that kind, you play every creature you can if it's on your resource curve. All of your creatures can only die twice, and dying is tracked. Like, if it dies in battlefield, it has a wound marker on it. And if you play it again, well, it has a wound marker on it, and it dies and receives a second wound, it is killed, meaning it's removed from your deck.
Yeah, it's some interesting mechanics, for sure.
So the idea of playing one of those games with, like, resource scarcity of, I may never be able to play this card again if I play it now, is an interesting tension. So Nowhere Prophet, pretty good game, a little expensive.
I would wait for it to go on sale if I was you, to be entirely honest. But yeah, I'm going to also recommend something because I'm trying to, like, I don't know. I don't have that much diversity of a media consumption because I don't really watch movies and I don't really watch TV. But I'm trying to recommend things that aren't video games for people who just don't like video games. So I'm going to try and recommend another podcast that I started listening to really recently called Jergenit. And Jergenit is it's similar to this where it's like a bad media consumption podcast. And review what is the name of the title? It's a review of The Secret Life of an American Teenager, which is a god awful, strong Christian undertones TV series that's pretty bad. And it's a pair of brothers that are enjoying their time doing that. And so if you enjoy like people talking about bad media and having like a pretty strong like leftist lean, then like that's a good place to go. But yeah, Jergenit. Like the sex joke. You can find us at I am at Thou Art Phi. I'm extremely not safe for work. I draw a lot of titty and a lot of horse. So if that's not for you, I wouldn't recommend it. And it also I yell a lot about politics. I got into a lot of fights about the shoplifting comic, and I had a lot of things to say about that. But otherwise, like, I try to be good to people and like everyone look out for each other. We're all dying and we got to live. You can also find Weird at
Weirdington E, which, is not remotely as pornographic,
or incendiary.
recently I did a fun little, some intersection between fan art and fanfic. Of pretty excited about something that I found out about as a result of the trailer for the new Ultraman series, Ultraman Z, that's just coming out. We both have a friend who is
no, we can't talk about that. We can't talk about that.
No, we can't talk about any details. We just know a guy who is working on it, and that's why we saw the trailer. Like, that's why we know about it. That's the extent I was going to say. They haven't even actually told us anything.
Anyways.
That, yeah, violates NDA.
The less we talk about it, the better.
Well, except to hype it. Like, go check out Ultraman Z.
Zed, I think you'll find it Zed.
I'm sorry. What was that? I know that you freaks up in the frozen north.
I mean, most of the world says
words
Zed.
Wrong. All say and spell words wrong all the time, like Kalur.
I mean, most of the world says Zed, so it's not really a thing.
No,
it's more weird.
As an American, moreover, Texan, I must assure you that we set the universal standard for all culture. So Ultraman Z, check that out. Check out the trailer. Email us if you have the courage at the email address, weirdingtonesq@gmail.com. But otherwise, man, we've only got one book left, but fine.
Yeah.
I don't think we should. I don't,
oh, it's going to get, I don't, this is just the beginning too, folks. It keeps going off the rails.
I don't want to.
Yes.
This has definitely all been some kind of terrible mistake.
If it takes them to tear the fascists down, down, down. If it takes them to tear the fascists down.